Hey everybody, this is Bob Barker with the AGC of Wisconsin, and I want to welcome you to the Ford Construction Podcast. Today I have with me my good friend and friend of the industry, AGC of America CEO Steve Sandher. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Hey, Steve, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're busy. I guess my first question is, how is all the staff holding up?
Adversity uncovers character, and I think we're seeing that constantly with our staff. We've got 65 people on staff, all working remotely. We have a senior team conference call every morning at 9 o'clock, usually lasts anywhere between 30 minutes and 45 minutes. Obviously, all of our team leaders are dealing with their folks on a daily basis as well. We got lucky and we implemented Microsoft Teams right before we went to the convention. Obviously, not knowing that we would be working remotely, but it's proven to be a godsend for us that we're able to have video chats on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, I know that we just had a staff meeting. We're still using Zoom, but we're using a password system. But, it's amazing how our operations have changed here. So, so out of those 60-some-odd folks, how many are involved in government affairs?
Yeah, so of the 65 people, 30 or so are involved in government affairs, and that includes 8 registered lobbyists, our legal team, our division directors in building, highway, utility, and federal construction and heavy construction, our PR person, our PR people. We have three people in our PR team. We have Ken Simonson, our economist. I think he's an integral part of our advocacy team because he. The economic information that he gathers and analyzes is very useful for us in our lobbying efforts. And then we have subject matter experts in to and safety and human resources, labor, environment. It allows us to engage in every issue that impacts the construction industry, which is what we endeavor to do.
Right. And, I had, I don't know if Mike Kennedy's part of that government affairs team, but, he's certainly really critical. And I don't know if you know this, but we had a meeting, a member call a couple of days ago, and he was pretty frantic about the whole PPP regulations and questions. And so I had dropped Mike a note, and we ended up having a Zoom call with Mike and our member. And he was a great resource, and our member really appreciated that. So,
Bob. Yeah, he is a great resource, and he is an integral part of our government relations activities.
You and him have been there about the same amount of time, right?
Mike's been there. Mike's been with AGC since 1982, I think. So he's at 38 years, and he talks about retirement, and I try to talk him out of it.
Right. You've been there, what, 34, 35 years?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I think, I have 2 tours of duty.
Okay.
I was there from 84 to 89 and then came back in 91 and have been back ever since.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I don't know how many of our members have seen you in action, but I've seen you in action for the last 30 years, and I'm always amazed by your knowledge of all the subjects that you guys have to deal with. So I guess some kudos to you. And I know you got a lot of good people around you. And they seem to be getting younger, Steve.
Yeah, they do. Everybody seems to be younger today.
Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily like that part of it, but they're certainly smart people, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they are smart, and they make me smarter, and that's why I can discuss at some level all of the issues that we're involved in.
Yeah, you know, this is a good time to have that youth when you need to be on your game 7 days a week, 24/7. So,
right.
Yeah. But hey, speaking of the PPP,
yes.
I know you sent a letter out to Mnuchin. Has there been any response from the feds on that?
Not really. In fact, just today they announced further guidance that is troubling, and that is that they're saying that if you take if you receive a PPP loan, that means you cannot deduct the salaries and benefits that you pay to your people on your income tax. And we have raised Cain on this issue. We are aware that people on the Hill, on the Senate Finance Committee, when they got wind of this, they have questioned it. Their view is that it is not what was intended, and they are looking at fixing this in the next piece of legislation dealing with the coronavirus that goes through. But we're continued to be troubled by the fact that Treasury seems to be moving the goalposts on a daily basis and making a lot of businesses, a lot of contractors, wondering whether applying for receiving a PPP loan is actually worth it. And that laying that type of uncertainty on people who are trying to make business decisions to literally keep their companies operating is really not welcome. It's unfortunate. We continue to press back on them. Beyond this letter, we have had conversations with some folks over at Treasury, and they say they're looking into it, but it is not been helpful, to say the least.
Right. So I know our members are not going to be happy to hear that, that's for sure. But all we can do is kind of keep after it, right?
I mean, if you read the letter that we sent to the Treasury Secretary last week or earlier this week, all the dates run together now. We basically say that you're creating an ambiguous standard for determining whether somebody properly received a loan. Now, one thing that we've put together to be helpful to our members is. Well, first of all, let me back up a second. Part of that guidance that came out last week said that any loan in excess of $2 million would be audited, and there'd be spot checks for loans of lesser amounts. The guidance says something along the lines of that when you applied for the loan, you had to have uncertain about business conditions or economic conditions, and the second condition being that you did not have access to liquidity, whatever that means. So let's take the first condition. What we have done is we have taken our survey results that we've done on almost a weekly basis since the week of March the 15th. And in those survey results, we can show increased anxiety from our members who respond to the survey. The first week we did the survey, it said, I think it was 19% said that they've had projects that were on their books canceled. That has ramped up to last week to 68%. So more than two-thirds of our members have say that they have had clients or owners cancel projects. So obviously anybody who's paying attention to our survey when they apply for a loan, recognizes that there is a tremendous amount of economic uncertainty in the construction industry. We've also compiled press clippings from local and national news organizations, from ENR, because we want to have basically our members to have a tool to use in the event that they are audited, that they can demonstrate to an audit, these are the things, an auditor, these are the things I was reading at the time that I applied for the loan. This is what caused me to believe that there was great economic uncertainty. This is what compelled me to apply for the loan. So basically, it's helping our members build a record in the event that they are audited. They can push that across the table at the auditor and say, this is what I was thinking at the time that I applied for this loan. And then the second part, the second condition about liquidity. Well, there are obviously many places where somebody can go and get a loan, but what are the terms of the loan? What is the collateral that's required for that loan? You just can't say that you have access to liquidity. Inevitably, everybody has potentially access to liquidity, but Treasury is not defining what are reasonable terms for acquiring that liquidity. And, in our view, Congress has created the access to liquidity through the PPP loans, and the only standards that they've established is you have to have less than 500 employees or meet the size standards of the SBA.
This is symptomatic of a lot of things in relation to the government and our industry, whether it's at the local level or state level or national level. They just don't really understand our industry. And that obviously continues to be a problem. Did I send you our... I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Did I send you our survey results?
I don't recall seeing them.
I'll ship them off to you, but, I've been doing this for 30 years, and whenever we would survey members on topics or whatever, you're lucky to get a 10% response rate. So last Friday, we decided to survey our members just to see how this has impacted them. And we got like a 54% response rate, which is pretty good. And, out of those respondents, about 90% said they had a project either postponed or canceled in March or March or April. So I think it's definitely going to impact us. And the other part of this whole PPP thing is that yesterday I'd actually had a podcast with three of our surety professionals, and they had talked about, the PPP and, the importance of contractors to have, this cash on hand, especially going into, the fall, late summer and fall, because that's when they really think that, the decrease in the activity in the market could start to hurt cash flows for contractors. And they had actually
worked down their backlog.
Yeah, they're working down their backlogs. And they had actually talked about owner payments getting stretched out to 120 days, even though their contracts say 30. So those are the kind of things where, sure you've got cash on hand, but you need it. And so hopefully we can get past that, and I'm sure you guys are going to make that happen.
If I get back to your point, though, about government not understanding construction, I agree with you. That's very true. But I think in the case here with Treasury, there was so much bad press about the Los Angeles Lakers and Shake Shack and Ruth Chris getting these loans because in the restaurants got a large scale exemption, and that was that you could have multiple locations as long as none of your locations had excess of 500 employees, you were eligible for a loan. And here you had highly capitalized publicly traded companies that were eligible for loans, and that I think put a black eye on the program. But you know, the administration and Congress, any administration, you know, they don't react to things; they overreact to things. And so now, all of a sudden, they're going to start creating or attempting to create additional requirements to demonstrate that they are being efficient and effective stewards of the public's money. And I'm all for that. I think we're all for that. But at the same time, the statutory language is clear about what was supposed to be done with this money. And we just have to fight this out and get Treasury to back off.
Right. I actually misspoke, Steve. We had 75% response rate of our general contractors, which is pretty amazing. But the webinars for next week, have those been finalized?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They're either Tuesday and Wednesday or Wednesday and Thursday, and these are attorneys from the law firm of Crowell and Mooring, and they are going to be addressing these new guidelines from Treasury and what contractors should be doing if they've applied for a loan. Whatever they plan today is probably going to change between now and the time that we actually have these webinars.
Sounds like it might even change after that. I mean, the way things are
going. Yeah, everything changes on a daily basis.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully we can get some clarity pretty soon. So we put out a notice yesterday, had our members put it on their calendars. Promoted the constructor cast. I think there's a lot of resources out there for our members. And I mean, AGC of America has really, really shined in this whole thing, Steve. I just got to give you guys kudos.
You guys have too. I mean, I think we're all demonstrating our value to our members. So,
moving on to the next topic, the National Building Trades had put out, some recommended safety standards in relation to the COVID pandemic. And I know, Sean, you had sent a letter to Sean McGarvey. Can you give us a little history on that? And if you've heard anything from them?
Yeah. So about 10 days ago or so, I was invited on a conference call with, other employer associations, specifically the specialty trade associations like NECA and SMACNA, et cetera. And Sean McGarvey, the president of the building trades, shared with us their recommended standards for dealing with employees, construction workers on job sites with regards to the COVID-19 virus. And I think there's a lot of agreement between what they're looking for and what's in the best interest of employers. And generally speaking, I think we're all in agreement that to keep construction workers working and to bring construction workers back to work, they have to feel secure that the employer is taking the necessary steps to make sure that they're in a safe and healthy environment. And we recognize that. I mean, one of the messages that we've been delivering consistently has been that every construction project that operates today does so because a governor or a mayor or a county judge has given them a permission slip to continue to operate as long as they demonstrate they're doing it safely. So I think there's a lot of agreement that this has to be our objective. And, you know, we feel like we have helped the industry by developing our own COVID-19 safety toolkit that's on our website, by recommending that employees monitor their job sites and ask their employees who enter the job site if they're exhibiting any symptoms, requiring social distancing, providing sanitary facilities, hygiene, extra hygiene, personal protective equipment, and the like. And when you look at the building trade standards, 95% of what they are recommending are things that we're recommending, and we're confident that our members are already doing so. I wrote a letter to Sean McGarvey this week, where I mentioned that, one, we appreciated what they've put forward. It was very thoughtful, very comprehensive. But we had some reservations about three issues in particular. The first would be requiring the employer, in this case, presumably the general contractor, to have a no-contact thermometer and take the temperature of all employees entering the job site. We agree that the employee should be asked about their current health conditions, but our concern about forcing the contractor to take temperature is challenging for us for two reasons. One, that's a medical procedure, and even though it's no contact, it could be considered to be invasive by the employee. Also, to the extent that the temperature is not being taken by a healthcare professional, it could potentially lead to liability issues for the general contractor who is taking the temperature of subcontractor employees. One of the things that we're particularly interested in and concerned about is the issue of an employee of a subcontractor who gets the virus and then says that he got it because the general contractor did not provide the necessary safety precautions which caused him or her to get sick. And so they can make an end run around workers' compensation and hold the non-employer, the general contractor, liable. The second concern we have with it is that taking the temperature doesn't really help guard against asymptomatic carriers. An individual who doesn't have any of the symptoms of the virus, but the virus is on their person in some form, and they are unwittingly spreading it at the job site, regardless of having normal health conditions, no temperature, no fever. So, our concern is that is not providing an adequate safeguard. It may make employees feel better that somebody's temperature is being taken, but it doesn't actually guard against asymptomatic infection. So that's one issue. The second issue is dealt with staggering schedules, staggering reporting times, and the like. And in the building trades standards, they say that the responsibility for staggering schedules and work crews and schedules is the exclusive right of the business manager of the respective trade. And we pushed back on that and said that that it's management prerogative to set those schedules in conformance with the collective bargaining agreement, and that can't be delegated to a union representative. We do acknowledge, though, that under the current circumstances, it is appropriate to consult with the business manager of the particular trade in order to make sure that there is agreement protecting employees and that acknowledgement that management is doing taking proper steps to do that. And then the third issue that we found fault with is that the standard that the building trades put forward would require respirators in situations where employees need to be in close proximity. Under current OSHA regs, respirators are typically required for high-risk exposures, and we do not think that this rises to that level. And so we've suggested that we maintain the current OSHA standards for when respirators are required. Now, having said all that, one reason that it was important for us to respond is that there are a lot of folks, particularly the unions, that want to see OSHA come out with a new COVID-19 standard so that there would be a national standard of protection. We are not certain that that's necessary yet, but we wanted to lay down a marker in the case that OSHA does move forward with a standard, that we can publicly let the building trades and others know that there are certain issues that that we care very much about, and we want to be able to protect employees, but we want to not expose employers to unnecessary liability. And we want any standards set by private organizations or by OSHA to rely on the science as we know it at this time.
So they must be passing those guidelines down to the local level at some extent, because we received a copy of the local building trades communication to our governor recommending the non-contact temperature taking. And,
right.
And we're on the same page with you on that, as far as the liabilities associated with it and the accuracy of the thermometers. There's just a lot of concerns about requiring that of the contractors. I guess, you know, you covered that topic in detail. You know, I think it's going to be interesting as we move forward trying to open the economy and these individual states, you know, the liability issues and, you know, the processes. I think the construction industry is in a good place to help just because of how we've handled this situation.
Yeah, I mean, we've proven to be pretty agile in incorporating new safety protocols in a very, very quick time frame, notwithstanding the challenges of finding adequate PPP or PPE. But one thing that we did tell the president in our letter to him following the first phone call of his economic revival group was that we thought the construction industry should be a model for how businesses that have closed down, how they can emerge and make sure that their employees and their customers have a higher degree of comfort that their health and safety is being protected as we move forward.
Hey, Steve. Anyway, I know you're a busy guy. I want to let you go, but before I do, on behalf of our members, I want to thank you and all of your staff for the job you're doing and the work that you're doing on behalf of our members, and it sounds like we're going to have to continue to do. So I appreciate your time today, and have a good weekend.
Thanks. You do the same, Bob, and thanks for all you're doing as well. We have a pretty good partnership, and we appreciate the support we get from AGC Wisconsin.
Thanks for listening to the Forward Construction Podcast. To access this and other AGC podcasts, go to the AGC website at www.agcwi.org or download directly at Google Play or Apple Podcasts. For more information on this podcast or to get involved, please contact Bob Barker at the AGC office.